Tea time.
Tea time.
Tea time.
Tea time. Tea time lecture.
Part 4. Lancelot and Guinevere. Now we come to the sorrowful tale of Lancelot and Guinevere, and of the death of King Arthur. Already it has been told that King Arthur had wedded Guinevere, the daughter of Leo de Crance, King of Cornwall, a damsel who seemed made of all the flowers, so fair was she, and slender and brilliant to look upon. And the knights in her father's court bowed down before her and smote their hardest in the jousts where Guinevere was present. But none dared ask her in marriage till Arthur came. Like the rest, he saw and loved her, but unlike them, he was a king, and might lift his eyes even unto Guinevere. The maiden herself scarcely saw or spoke to him, but did her father's bidding in all things, and when he desired her to make everything ready, to go clothed as beseemed a princess to King Arthur's court, her heart beat with joy at the sight of rich stuffs and shining jewels. Then, one day, there rode up to the castle a band of horsemen sent by the king to bring her to his court, and at the head of them Sir Lancelot du Lake, friend of King Arthur, and winner of all the jousts and tournaments where knights meet to gain honour. Day by day they rode together apart, and he told her tales of gallant deeds done for love of beautiful ladies, and they passed under trees gay with the first green of spring, and over hyacinths covering the earth with sheets of blue, till at sunset they drew rein before the silken pavilion, with the banner of Uther Pendragon floating on the top. And Guinevere's heart went out to Lancelot before she knew. One evening she noted, far across the plain, towers and buildings shining in the sun, an array of horsemen ride forth to meet her. One stopped before her dazzled eyes, and leaping from his horse, bowed low. Arthur had come to welcome her, and do her honour, and to lead her home. But looking up at him, she thought him cold, and, timid and alone, her thoughts turned again to Lancelot. After that, the days and years slipped by, and these two were ever nearest the king, and in every time of danger the king cried for Lancelot and trusted his honour and the queen's to him. Sir Lancelot spoke truly when he told Elaine that he had never worn the badge of lady or maiden, but for all that everyone looked on Sir Lancelot as the queen's knight, who could do no worship to any other woman. The king, likewise, held Sir Lancelot bound to fight the queen's battles, and if he was absent on adventures of his own, messengers hastened to bring him back, as in the fight with Sir Mador. So things went on for many years, and the king never guessed that the queen loved Lancelot best. It befell one spring, in the month of May, that Queen Guinevere bethought herself that she would like to go a-maying in the woods and fields that lay around the city of Westminster on both sides of the river. To this intent, she called her own especial knights and bade them be ready the next morning, clothed all in green, whether silk or cloth, and, said she, I shall bring with me 10 ladies, and every knight shall have a lady behind him, and be followed by a squire and 2 yeomen, and I will that you shall all be well horsed. Thus it was done, and the 10 knights, arrayed in fresh green, the emblem of the spring, rode with the queen and her ladies in the early dawn, and smelt the sweet of the year, and gathered flowers which they stuck in their girdles and doublets. The queen was as happy and light of heart as the youngest maiden, but she had promised to be with the king at the hour of 10 and gave the signal for departure unwillingly. The knights were mounting their horses when suddenly, out of a wood on the other side, rode Sir Meliagraunce, who for many years had loved the queen and had sought an occasion to carry her off, but found none as fair as this. Out of the forest he rode, with 20 men in armour and 100 archers behind him, and bade the queen and her followers stay where they were, or they would fare badly. "Traitor," cried the queen, "what evil deed would you do? You are a king's son and a knight of the Round Table, yet you seek to shame the man who gave you knighthood? But I tell you that you may bring dishonour on yourself, but you will bring none on me, for rather would I cut my throat in twain." "As for your threats, madam, I pay them no heed," returned Sir Meliagraunce. "I have loved you many a year, and never could I get you at such an advantage as I do now, and therefore I will take you as I find you." Then all the knights spoke together, saying, "Sir Meliagraunce, bethink yourself that in attacking men who are unarmed you put not only our lives in peril, but your own honour. Rather than allow the queen to be shamed, we will each one fight to the death, and if we did aught else we should dishonour our knighthood forever." "Fight as well as you can," answered Sir Meliagraunce, "and keep the queen if you may." So the knights of the Round Table drew their swords, and the men of Sir Meliagraunce ran at them with spears. But the knights stood fast and clove the spears in two before they touched them. Then both sides fought with swords, and Sir Kay and 5 other knights were felled to the ground with wounds all over their bodies. The other 4 fought long and slew 40 of the men and archers of Sir Meliagraunce, but in the end, too, they were overcome. When the queen saw that, she cried out for pity and sorrow, "Sir Meliagraunce, spare my noble knights, and I will go with you quietly on this condition, that their lives be saved, and that wherever you may carry me, they shall follow. For I give you warning that I would rather slay myself than go with you without my knights, whose duty it is to guard me." "Madam," replied Sir Meliagraunce, "for your sake they shall be led with you into my own castle, if you will consent to ride with me." So the queen prayed the 4 knights to fight no more, and she and they would not part, and to this, though their hearts were heavy, they agreed. The fighting being ended, the wounded knights were placed on horseback, some sitting, some lying across the saddle, according as they were hurt, and Sir Meliagraunce forbade anyone to leave the castle, which had been a gift to him from King Arthur, for sore he dreaded the vengeance of Sir Lancelot if this thing should reach his ears. But the queen knew well what was passing in his mind, and she called a little page who served her in her chamber and desired him to take her ring and hasten with all speed to Sir Lancelot and pray him, "If he loves me, to rescue me. Spare not your horse, neither for water nor for land." And the boy bided his time, then mounted his horse and rode away as fast as he might. Sir Meliagraunce spied him as he flew, and knew whither he went, and who had sent him, and he commanded his best archers to ride after him and shoot him ere he reached Sir Lancelot. But the boy escaped their arrows and vanished from their sight.